It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. And, man, we've got a lot of sports to talk about today, especially in the NFL world. What a great fourth quarter for J.J. McCarthy last night. And, man, the Bears had him. And I give the young kid a credit. Had not played in the NFL game, had not taken a snap in a regular season game, and showed a lot of moxie late in that. And six of eight passes, 87 yards, two touchdowns, and a 14-yard touchdown run to propel the Vikings over the Bears 27-24. Last night we talked about this with George Kittle and said, hey, listen, you get older, you know, it takes a while to get back from injuries. That pulled hamstring, he is now officially on injured reserve for the 49ers, which means he'll be out at least 4 weeks. We'll see how long it'll take to come back. Still no word yet on Brock Purdy with the shoulder and toe injury, but it did not sound good, the initial reports on Purdy. And it looks as though there's a pretty good chance Mac Jones will play. And why I say that, when Bobby and I walked into the Silver Slipper Casino last night, the line on that game was 6.5 points. Charlie, today it has dropped faster than the Titanic went down.
Oh, yeah.
That thing is down all the way to 4.5 points, which goes to tell you the people in Vegas think that Brock Purdy's not going to play in this game at all. And, you know, the whole offseason, we've talked about the improvement with this defense, which I think will happen. But this team has had some difficulties with mobile quarterbacks. And not that Purdy's a runner in any stretch of the imagination in comparison to Kyler Murray. Another thing, too, is trying to guard a tight end. I mean, we've spent months and months. We talked about it all last week as they go up against Trey McBride. Well, guess what? You don't have to go up against Kittle this week because he's on injured reserve. And this is some bad news for the Saints. The 49ers cut Jake Moody today. Jake Moody is a guy that was a third-round pick from Michigan, highly erratic as a kicker. We talked to Vic Tafer last night, and I told him if he wasn't a third-round pick, he'd have been gone long ago, and he said, I agree with you. And it looks as though Eddie Pinheiro was going to be the guy they're going to bring in. Eddie kicked for a while with the Jets. Brent Barrier, who's their special teams coach, was with the Jets when he first kicked. In the last couple of years, he's been with Carolina, where he's been a pretty consistent kicker there for the Carolina Panthers. But replacing Moody, that's not good news for the Saints, because you didn't know what you were going to get with Moody. Every time he stepped up to hit a field goal, again, a guy that he'll get more chances in his football life. Anytime you're a high-round pick, and he came out with a pretty good credentials there, but, you know, they spent a second-day pick on a kicker, and it just didn't work out for the 49ers. But I think we'll find out a lot more tomorrow, Charlie, when we get that first injury report. But that line jumping down from 6.5 to 4.5 is not about George Kittle. It is all about Brock Purdy.
So a couple things here, Mike. As far as the drop-off from Kittle to what they have behind Kittle in that tight end room, it is quite steep. You're talking about Luke Farrell, who was a 2021 draft pick in the fifth round at Jacksonville, who made his San Francisco debut this past week, and in 67 games played in his career, 322 receiving yards. Jake Tongs, who's a third-year player for the 49ers, has appeared in 16 games for his career and only has 15 receiving yards. So you're talking about an all-pro-level player in Kittle, and the drop-off from him, like, that's why we always goof on the folks that say the next man up, because it's just non-existent here. they don't have anything behind Kittle in the tight end room. So you go from playing Trey McBride, who's one of the best tight ends in football, to, you know, a couple backups effectively in that tight end room. As far as the Purdy thing goes, we'll find out more, like you said, when they practice on Wednesday. I imagine, Mike, it's going to be really interesting to see how that line continues to shift. I think it may have even been over a touchdown, like 7.5 points. It's all the way down to currently 4.5 in Vegas. And we'll see if it continues to shift if Purdy doesn't practice, at least on Wednesday, maybe Thursday. And by the time we do pick six on Thursday, Mike, I'm interested to see what that line actually is, because all reports are seeming that Purdy might, in fact, miss this upcoming week. So all that to be said, the Saints are catching the 49ers at a pretty darn good time.
Yeah, it takes a lot of money to drop a line or a major injury. And one thing with Vegas, they seemingly know about it long before we do. I can understand if it started at 7 and went to 6.5, and that may be a little bit on Kittle. But, man, to fall off 2 points, that is really, really big. You brought up Jack Stahl now on the active roster for the Saints. Again, this is some talking points we had when the initial cuts came up. They can't go through the season with just two tight ends. You had to have Stahl put back on the active roster. Also, too, is he gives you, because he did play this part in Philly as a blocking fullback in short yarded situations. He was known as a more of a run blocker than he was as a receiver during camp. Both Bobby Jay and also Steve Geller spoke about how well he had caught the football in the practice session. So Stahl being on the roster, no surprise there. And this is no surprise either, because when he got cut loose, I said it, you're a second-round pick, you get a lot of chances in this world. Isaiah Foskey today was signed up by the Cincinnati Bengals. He did work out for the Bears, and you see the connection there with Dennis Allen with Philly. The understanding is that Howie Roseman, the GM, had a really high grade on him coming out of Notre Dame. Well, the connection in Cincinnati is their defensive coordinator, Al Golden. Al was at Notre Dame right at the time. Foskey was there. And so there's a connect the dots there. And he starts off on the practice squad. Let's see if he actually gets to play in any games anytime soon. But, again, when you're a second- or third-round pick like Jake Moody, the kicker, he's going to get another chance. So will Foskey. And he's getting that second chance with the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll come back. We'll have a lot more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody a little after 4:30 this afternoon, it is Tulane Tuesday, and the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall, will join us talking about the big game this coming Saturday as Tulane plays Duke, and also kind of looking back on what happened last week to the Green Wave also. Last night on Sports Talk, we had a bunch of people texting in. They had insider information that the Saints were going to sign Jabril Peppers. Now, part of that was, piecing stuff together with Julian Blackman going down with another labrum injury, which is, I feel really, really bad for him to have, you know, injury on the same shoulder back-to-back years and early in the season both times. And the fact that Peppers had posted on Instagram, you know, God has a plan for him. Now, he had been a starter with the Patriots for a couple of years, really solid football player there. Well, Jabril Peppers, I don't know, the inside information of Connect the Dots wasn't quite there, because Peppers today signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He did not sign with the New Orleans Saints. So that'll be interesting, too, in training of what exactly happens there for the Saints and what direction they'll go with. Are they going to give Jonas Sanker that opportunity to be the guy to work alongside Justin Reed at the safety position. But I know, you know, some people want to jump ahead, and I get it. They were trying to piece one thing, and one would equal two. But in this case, the 1-1 didn't equal the Saints. It equaled the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the veteran Jabril Peppers did not sign with the Saints. He signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And for what it's worth, Mike, I think that the Steelers also suffered a safety injury in week one. And it's what we always talk about, right? Leading into the season, these veterans that are off teams, they kind of wait to see which team has a hole at a position that will pop up due to an injury. So the Saints and the Steelers are both in that similar spot. It was, let's see, it was Deshaun Elliott who had suffered an injury in week one for Pittsburgh. And that's why they went out and signed Jabril Peppers. So, and it's like you said, Mike, I just echo the sentiments about Julian Blackman because he also played really well in week one. And really throughout the offseason, he was a buzzing name about one of those studs in the secondary that could really help this team. And just to suffer the same issue with a labrum injury and potentially need season-ending surgery to kind of fix it, it's, you feel for the guy because, once again, he was a really good pickup late in the process because, if you'll remember, this only really happened after Tyrann Mathieu kind of retired unexpectedly. The Saints had to shuffle, and then they go and scoop up, you know, free agent safety and Julian Blackman. And, I mean, it was kind of a match made in heaven until, you know, the injury happens in week one. So you feel bad for him, and we'll see what the Saints decide to do. There's a reason that they used a third-round pick on Jonas Sanker. They're obviously high on him as a player. You know, it's the question about, do you throw the kid into the fire at this point, Mike?
You might have to. He might be your best option at this stage, especially going up against the 49ers. He might be your best option here. What's so funny about that is I had talked to Rick Venturi, who's the color guy for the Indianapolis Colts. And when Tyrann retired, he was like, man, I wonder if they'd have interest in Julian Blackman. But I hear he's close to a deal with the Carolina Panthers. But he had left Carolina with no deal. And then sure enough, a couple hours later, Blackman signs up with the Saints, and it looked to be a good fit. Really hard, charging guy, good against the run, plays the pass well. Bobby talked about he had like five or six interceptions during the training camp. But, you know, once the injury bug catches sometimes, it stays there, and it has for Julian Blackman. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL when we return. It's Tulane Tuesday, and Green Wave head coach John Sumrall joins us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettillier along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes. And it's Tulane Tuesday and is brought to you by Fleet Supply Warehouse, providing wholesale distribution with next day delivery throughout South Louisiana. Got the head football coach of the Green Wave, John Sumrall. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Hope all is well.
Coach, not everything is perfect in life, but if I listen to my texters, I don't know where they work, but I'd like to find a job there. You know, about there are certain things that happen that, I mean, bottom line is you want to win. You did this past weekend against South Alabama, but, you know, that was some things to start the game. You fell behind quickly. Your team showed some fight, and then the fourth quarter, it was tight. It was really, really tight there. I think just sometimes in a game like that, maybe focus wasn't the right term to use, but sometimes after playing that opener and what you put into going against Northwestern, it's maybe not quite there in game two. We saw the same thing happen when LSU played Louisiana Tech, and Brian Kelly said almost the exact same thing, too, about, hey, listen, I'll focus, and we got to do a better job of coaching, getting them ready. But it is something of human nature that does happen in those type situations. Not taken away from South Alabama. They did their best there, but sometimes that first game does take a little bit of edge off.
Yeah, you know, there's no bad wins, but there's definitely some ugly ones. We won ugly a little bit. We spotted the other team 14 points pretty early. I mean, 7 minutes and 50 seconds into the game, you look up and we're down 14-0. The first drive, they executed really well, and we didn't. And the second drive, we just kind of, a DB sort of got off balance and sort of stumbled almost and gave up a long touchdown pass that, you know, it's hard to make a play when you're not under your control with your balance and your body. And so you look up, we're down 14-0, and then we go on a 33-3 run the next 40-something minutes of the game. I mean, we really kind of controlled the flow of the game after that for quite a while. And in the last 7.5, 8 minutes of the game, we kind of got a little sloppy again. And, you know, the frustrating part of it was in week one, we played really clean football in regards to just procedural stuff, operating from line scrimmage, nothing dumb penalty-wise, and we committed too many penalties. We didn't play as clean procedurally, and you know, you can't beat anybody until you don't beat yourselves. We tried to beat ourselves some, but, you know, the nice thing is we're able to learn hopefully some of these lessons that we didn't do well and still get a win. You know, in the post-game locker room, I asked the team, I said, guys, was that our best tonight? And they all said no. And I said, well, I'm glad you realize it, because it wasn't. And we've got to be better. To be able to win and not be at your best is a good thing, but we, with the gauntlet we got coming up schedule-wise here in front of us now, we're going to have to play a heck of a lot better to get any sort of desired outcome.
Coach, you brought up that you, after the 14-0 deficit, you got with your position coaches and said, hey, listen, got to get our groups ready. And so, you know, yeah, talent is great to have it, but also too, coaching matters. And I think getting them sort of reset. And you saw that run that your team made afterwards. And so I think that that's a part of coaching a lot of times people don't get, is making sure that your unit is doing their job. Just do your job. Don't do too much, because a lot of times if you try too much, you know, in doing, you get yourself in trouble. But I thought it was interesting that you relied on your coaches to kind of compartmentalize this to get this team back reset.
Yeah, you know, the first thing there in game, I went on the headset and told all the coaches, go look your position group in the eye. Go look them all in the eye. Sit down with them and just tell them, like, ask them, hey, what is our foundation? Like, what are we built on? What are we about? All right? And so, you know, and we've got core values in this program that are more than just words on a wall. And so I asked them, like, hey, what's our foundation? What are we built on? We know what we're built on. We're built on having a great attitude, being tough, playing with discipline, and loving getting the opportunity to go play. And I said, man, let's look like that. Because right now we hadn't. Let's look like that from here on. And so, you know, we weathered that storm early, and our kids did respond. The coaches did a good job on the sideline of kind of steadying them. And then, you know, to your point about just doing your job, it's funny you brought that up, because that's sort of been my theme all week this week. I'm like, guys, last week it seemed like we were worried about maybe doing too much. Like, Don't worry about trying to win the game on a play or doing something special. Just do your job really well. If you do that over and over and over again, then you look up and usually good things have happened.
Coach, elephant in the room, certainly, and this is going to happen for every program. You lose a top player like you did in this offseason with your starting quarterback, Darian Mensah, going to Duke. And I guess the best way to put it, it's almost like, you know, you dating and you're going out with somebody and, you know, things going good for a while and then you break up and they're going out with somebody else. But that's part of life that you got to move on. And in the current state that college athletics is today, that's going to be the norm. I mean, you're going to have players leaving here and there and going up against their other teams. But I think, you know, one thing I give Hebert a lot of credit for, he said, Mike, quarterback trumps every position out on the field. It's going to get talked about more than anything. You get way too much credit when you win. You get way too much blame when you lose. And in this sort of spot, I think you said it best that, hey, he led us and really helped us win a lot of games last year. Okay, I'm not thrilled that he left, but there's nothing you could have done about that. And so you have to move on at that point in life. And I do think that that's certainly going to be kind of headline news, no matter who's covering this game, is going to be because, you know, Mensah's coming back here to play the Green Wave.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a big storyline in a lot of people's eyes in the game is Darian's return. And look, I've said this, you know, many times publicly and privately, I don't care if you've played one snap, 100 snaps, or 1,000 snaps for me. If I've coached you, I'm going to love all my players forever. Right? And that doesn't mean maybe I love that they left or whatever. Like, that doesn't have to be the case either. But I love Darren. I care about him. Enjoyed coaching him. You know, wish him success. Obviously, we want to win on Saturday, and he's the quarterback on the other team now, and that's the world we live in. And so, but it's not one player versus our team. It's their team versus our team. And so I think, you know, from a coach's perspective, yeah, we have to scout whoever the quarterback is and know, hey, here's what they do well, here's their strengths, and try to be prepared for what the issues they present. But this is not, and from a coach's perspective, this is no sort of like a revenge game or a, because if you do that, you're not going to be focused on doing your job at a high level, you know? And so that's where you get kind of maybe sideways if you focus on things that have nothing to do with you actually performing, preparing the right way. And so look, a lot of obvious things there in that storyline, but it's Duke versus Tulane. It's not their quarterback versus Tulane. And I'm grateful for what Darian did here. You know, going back, did everything we could try to do to keep him. Wasn't able to, and that's the world we live in.
Coach, you're kind of scouting report of this Duke Blue Devil squad. I mean, I watched them play Illinois, and, you know, the number 11 team in the country. And like, the final score, 45-19, I don't think it's really indicative of how close that game was, at least in the first half. Duke did what Northwestern did when you played them at Yulman last week, right? Where 5 turnovers to 0, minus 5 in the turnover differential. I mean, that's just a death knell for any team, regardless of who you're playing, much less the number 11 team in the country. Just want to get your scouting report of Duke as a squad and what you kind of see and what stands out about them.
Yeah, well, you know, defensively, I think their defensive line is really, really good. They're twitchy, they're long, they're physical, they play with some violence. They stick out as an elite position group, and then the receivers are phenomenal players. They got 4 guys that I think are high-level starters. This little slot receiver, number 7, they got a transfer, number 18, who's a big-time player. They got a transfer that's been at Michigan and Oklahoma, number 1, and then another kid that starts for him, number 2. So all the receivers, the throw game, I think, is challenging. You know, and then obviously Darian's done a good job throwing a football. And like you did hit on, the turnovers got them. Really, they were minus 5 in the turnover margin, and one of those being a muff punt, 2 fumbles, and an interception. And then they also had three fumbles and then an interception and a muff punt. And then they also had on punt return a penalty that extended the drive for Illinois. That doesn't show up in a turnover margin per se, but they had 2 guys with the same jersey number on the field, which was a penalty. So that extended a 6th drive or gave the ball back another time. And you're not going to win doing that. Really, for most of the game, they controlled the flow of the game. The whole first half, they were out rushing Illinois and really creating a lot of negative plays for Illinois. I thought they outplayed Illinois the first part of the game. Illinois just played clean and didn't beat themselves. And really didn't do anything maybe exceptional or unique. They just kind of stayed the course. And it's hard to win when you have that turnover margin. It's a really good football team, a really talented team. When you saw them playing at their best last week, man, they were impressive. And we got our work cut out for us. They're a really good opponent.
Coach, I know Illinois' quarterback pretty well. This Altmaier kid, he's from Mississippi. Yep. Coach O was trying to recruit him to go to LSU. He goes to Ole Miss. He ends up at Illinois, and he's not one of these guys that'll knock your socks off if you're watching him throw, but he's a winner. There is something about that, that you're a winner, and that he is at a pretty high level. You brought up today about the fact that the crowd. You think that this is a situation to have, you know, a huge crowd there at Yeoman to get these team fired up and to have the crowd behind them. And I think a lot of times, too, to have that 12th man out there and what it can create for an opposing quarterback, just from a sound standpoint of you trying to call plays, trying to adjust or whatever it is, you put that as a big emphasis this week when you're going to play Duke.
Yeah, I think we need to have a great environment. I mean, look, we've got an ACC opponent coming to town who's won 9 games in the season twice in the last 3 years. It should be a great turnout. They should give us it should be a great home field advantage. It should be an environment that's fun to play in. It's got some electricity and needs to be able to make some noise and have an impact on the game. And there's no reason why we shouldn't have a really good turnout to support this team and give these guys an opportunity to be successful.
Coach, when you went back and look at the film, was there a couple players there that, you know, sometimes during the game you're so focused on other things, but then when you watch the film, there's a couple guys that really stuck out to you?
Yeah, I think defensively on the D-line, Santana Hopper played at a high level. I thought offensively Bryce Bohannon played at a high level. You're talking about our team, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Bryce Bohannon in the last game offensively, I thought played really clean and did some good things. And then in the kicking game, I thought Anthony Brown Stevens, our kick returner last week, he had a 40-yard return, did some really good things. And there were several other guys that played good, but those are the three that come to mind in all three phases that I thought maybe played well above maybe what the standard is to give us a chance to win.
With having a couple transfer quarterbacks in the lineup, and that is a growth process. And you and I spoke about this last week. I really think game three is where you make that big jump from 2 to 3. Because now you've gotten a little bit under your belt. Your offensive line has played as a unit together, your defensive line, and you play a 3-man front, but you rotate 10 guys. Everybody kind of knowing what they have to do. The progress there with your two young quarterbacks that you were able to bring in as transfer guys.
Yeah, I think they're both got their feet underneath them now. I mean, you know, Brendan got the first real meaningful snaps in the game last week and did a nice job with him. And Jake obviously has started the last 2 weeks and done some good things, but you know, he's only been here for a little over a month and a half. Like, he's very new to this environment. And I think you're right. You know, we've talked about this before, but you know, the NFL, you get your preseason games. College, we don't have any preseason games. So some of these early non-conference games that we're in right now, they count for permanent on the record. But some of it you're trying to figure out, all right, who are we a little bit? Like, what is this team about? And while you're doing it, you want to win the game, but you also got to learn about your team. And I'm learning that both these quarterbacks, we can win with both of them in a game. I like the way they lead. I like the way they play. They both got mental toughness about them. And really, really enthusiastic about the direction we can go with them leading us.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always love when you come on. And I got to tell you, man, you give it to people straight. And I think they respect that. That's not a lot of BS in all this because, you know, some of these coaches' shows, it's almost like cliche. Man, you come on, you tell it like it is.
Well, my wife would tell you, you know, my greatest strength's also my greatest weakness. I'm brutally honest, all right? So I ain't got no two other ways. I just one way, and it's straight up.
Thank you, Coach. Hey, we appreciate that. Thank you so much. And good luck this Saturday against Duke.
Thank y'all. Roll wave.
Thanks, Coach.
All righty. The head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall. Our Tulane Tuesday is brought to you by Fleet Supply Warehouse, providing wholesale distribution with next-day delivery throughout South Louisiana. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one on Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long. Want to thank Tulane head football coach John Summerall for our Tulane Tuesday segment brought to you weekly by Fleet Supply Warehouse. When we come back a little after 5:20 from Odyssey Sports. You hear him also and watch him on Fox Sports. Mark Schlereth will join us. We'll go all around the NFL. He covered Jacksonville, Carolina, so we'll talk to him a little bit about that right off the bat. We'll have a lot more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.